we wanted within this project to develop a depth and a breadth to the research that we felt would be better achieved by narrowing our focus. So in this project, we've looked at Christian responses to poverty in the UK over the last decade of austerity. The team, as Baroness Ruth has suggested already, consists of myself and Stephanie, both of us from the Centre for Trust, Peace and Social Relations at Coventry University, and colleagues Professor Peter Scott from the University of Manchester and Professor Ruth Beckford from the University of Winchester. Before we move on and I hand over to Stephanie, just a word or two to set the project in context so that you're aware of where the insights that we're sharing have come from. The project, as I say, is the first analysis by academic theologians of Christian action on poverty in the UK since the global financial crash. The project has been a mixed methodological project. So we have drawn on six detailed ethnographic case studies in Birmingham, London and Manchester, which we will talk a little bit about in a few minutes. We have done a series of interviews with activists and practitioners. We have interviewed church leaders from more than a dozen, national church leaders from more than a dozen Christian denominations in the UK, and regional church leaders from England, Scotland, Northern Ireland and Wales have all participated in an online survey. So what we've tried to do is to gather data in a variety of ways which provides a more holistic and richer picture of the development of poverty and inequality and Christian action on poverty in the UK than has been developed before. And Stephanie now is going to say a word or two about our understanding of poverty and austerity.
Thank you, Chris. So first, thinking about the complexity of poverty in the UK, there are approximately 14.4 million people currently experiencing poverty in the UK. And on the Life on the Breadline research, we have emphasised an understanding of poverty that is intersectional. And by that, we mean that it can't be broken down into neat categories. So we can't just talk about food poverty or housing poverty or child poverty. Because if a family or a person are experiencing poverty in one way, such as food, then most likely they're also experiencing poverty in other ways, because experiencing poverty affects every aspect of a person's life. It can't be broken down into these neat categories. So it can be a problem when we focus on just single aspects of poverty, if we do that in isolation from other aspects of poverty, because then we're not recognising the holistic and the intersectional nature of poverty. You can see on the right-hand side of the slide a graph from the Trussell Trust that shows the rise in food bank use from 2015 to 2021. In 2015, they gave over 1.1 million food parcels, and of the last year, that had risen to over 2.5 million. So that's an often referenced statistic in relation to rising poverty, but important to emphasise as well that poverty is not just about food poverty. We've seen in the last 12 months that when we combine structural injustice, austerity and COVID-19, sadly, that has been what can be called a perfect storm for rising inequality and poverty in the UK. So during our research, we asked our research participants, and this was local people, regional church leaders and national church leaders. We asked them what they thought poverty was like in their neighbourhood and across the UK in the present day. And people referred to different ways that they saw poverty. lots of people reference food banks, but also a rise in homelessness and a rise in the number of people rough sleeping. Not having enough money to live on in general, but also long-term deprivation. And here a recognition that poverty in this country is actually not new. And some estates and communities have, and people and families have been experiencing deprivation and poverty for a number of years. People also talked about unemployment. They talked about low pay. So it's important to emphasise here that experiencing poverty is not necessarily someone that's receiving state benefits, but there's a rising case of people in work that are experiencing poverty. So that links to insecure jobs as well. People talked about poverty linked to people suffering from poor health and also people living in poor quality housing, which we'll come on to in a minute. The word austerity, but what do we actually mean by austerity? Well, in our research, we have defined austerity in three different ways. First, austerity is economic, and in this respect, austerity is an economic policy. It's been a policy for just over a decade, followed by subsequent governments to reduce government spending, particularly in relation to public spending, in order to reduce government debt. And in that respect, austerity has often been presented as a necessity, but it is important to recognise as well that following the economic crash and the economic crisis of 2008, countries such as Iceland did take another route rather than austerity in response to the crisis. So that's one meaning of austerity. But the second that's really important to also recognise is personal austerity. Austerity is not just an economic policy. It affects people's everyday lives. It's not something that's just remote, that's talked about in kind of economic circles, but it affects you, it affects me, it affects our neighbours, and it affects each of us differently, which I'll come on to in just a moment. A third way of understanding austerity is in terms of self-restraint. And here austerity can kind of hark back to remembering the Second World War when during and after the Second World War, there was a period of austerity. And here austerity can almost become romanticised as people remember a difficult time that people pulled through together. And it's important, therefore, to recognise that the current period of austerity is not the first period of austerity that the UK has experienced. A final thing on the meaning of austerity is that something that's come out from talking to people, particularly in local neighbourhoods in our six case studies, is that austerity is not a word that is generally used in people's everyday language. It's used in kind of public policy and in the media and in academic circles, but not so much in everyday language. So I mentioned in terms of the economics and personal understandings of austerity, that austerity has affected each of us differently. So some of the groups that are on the screen that austerity has affected more than others is that austerity has affected the poorest in society more than the richest. It's affected women more than it's affected men. It's affected single parents more than it's affected other family units. Austerity has affected disabled people more than people who aren't disabled. It's affected people of ethnic and racial minorities more than other groups. And austerity has affected children and young people more than it has affected pensioners. And some of these effects and austerity policies can be found on the Life on the Breadline website, where we have an austerity timeline. If you Google Breadline research, you'll find that under our resources section, where we've got a resource that takes you through the last 10 years of austerity. And a final thing to say on austerity is that austerity is linked to the causes of poverty in the UK. both in terms of as a policy, but also structural injustice that people have been experiencing. So some of the voices from our Life on the Breadline research, here we've got represented national, regional, church leaders, and also some food bank volunteers who we spoke to. So Bishop Paul Butler from the Church of England, when we asked him about austerity, he said, austerity means that life's been tougher and harder for many people. So that recognises the unequal impact of austerity. And a Methodist regional church leader talked about the changes in welfare having an impact on people and whether people can make ends meet. Two quotes now from some of our participants being a food bank in Birmingham, which has been one of our case studies. And Samantha, who's a food bank client, she said to me, universal credit is a big one. People are killing themselves, you know, Bab. I've contemplated it. Why struggle like this for another 10, 15 years? Now that is a quote that was difficult to hear, difficult for her to say, difficult for us to listen to now, but really shows the impact that austerity has made in some people's lives and what the difference people living in poverty can experience. But finally, a food bank volunteer at B30 Food Bank recognised that she hadn't really been affected by austerity. She said, I'm very lucky, middle class, middle age, the right demographic. Finally, something that we have been thinking about during our research is poverty of violence. So a church community worker in North Kensington said, austerity poverty is violent, it's done damage to our community. So one thing that we'd like to think about today is if we understand poverty as violence, then how does that change how we respond to poverty and how do we respond to some of those structural causes of poverty? And with that, I'm going to hand over.
So in light of what Stephanie has shared with us about the nature of poverty and its relationship with the so-called age of austerity, what different Christian responses to such poverty have we encountered during our Life on the Breadline research? This short animation, which we created about 2 years ago now, provides a brief glimpse into some of these responses, and let's play that for you now.
The age of austerity began over a decade ago. Austerity policies were intended to reduce the national debt by cutting government spending. The last decade has been the most recent period of austerity in the UK, but not the first in living memory. The UK government calls austerity an economic policy. It's also a political choice. Austerity affects people's daily lives, decision-making, and mental health. It affects where people can afford to live and whether they can afford to eat and heat their homes. Austerity has affected employed and unemployed people. But austerity has not affected everyone equally. Overall, disabled people, children, single parents, women, people of racial and ethnic minorities, and the poorest in UK society have been most affected by austerity. The UK government has denied that there is a link between austerity policies and rising poverty. However, the top three causes of people using Trussell Trust food banks have been low income, benefit delays and benefit changes. These causes are all related to changes in the welfare state over the last 10 years. Austerity is not just a social problem, it is a spiritual issue. Churches have responded in three overlapping ways: welfare provision, campaigning and enterprise. Food banks are an example of welfare provision. Church Action on Poverty is an example of campaigning, and SPAC Nation is an example of a church enterprise that loans people money to develop business ideas. But is this enough? In 2018, Archbishop Justin Welby said, "Austerity is a theory for the rich and the reality of suffering for the poor." The Archbishop echoed sentiments expressed in the Bible about poverty and inequality. Is structural change needed to defeat poverty? What is the theology behind welfare, campaigning and enterprise responses? Do these theologies impact policy and help people living in poverty? Are they capable of stimulating structural change? In Life on the Breadline Research, we are exploring these questions to shape the debate in policy and churches. If austerity kills, can the church's response give life?
In the 2 years that have passed since we made that animation, we've been looking at the different Christian responses to austerity, age, poverty that you see on the screen. I want to say a word or two very briefly about these. You see that there are six different responses to poverty that we've identified on the screen. These are all different approaches to addressing or engaging with austerity, age, poverty that we've encountered during our Life on the Breadline research. You've got caring responses, the kind of the welfare-based, charity-based approach typified, for example, by the food bank or the breakfast club or the soup kitchen. We've got advocacy, the engagement of, in the case of our research, church leaders and speaking truth to power, not least in relation to one of our case studies, which relates to the work of Notting Hill Methodist Church following the Grenfell Tower fire around issues of housing justice. There are the social enterprise approaches to poverty and inequality that focus much more on individual empowerment and, as we see on the screen, self-help, not least through education and collective community building and social the development of community-facing social enterprises. We then have campaigning approaches which are typified, for example, by campaigns for a living wage or a universal basic or citizens' income, shaped in a Christian context by far more radical theological understandings, which suggest that for people of faith, God has created all people equal. Therefore, in an unequal society where some people are included and others are consciously excluded, that God necessarily has a preferential option for the poor because inequality contradicts the will and the nature of that God. So let's move on to the next slide. That's just a word or two about some of those responses. We need to recognise, however, that the responses I touched on, together with what's often referred to as the prosperity gospel, which some have described as a kind of a neoliberal Christian response to poverty, which takes a very different, very individualised approach to responding to poverty that we can talk about a little later if there are any questions about that approach. We need to recognise that Christian anti-poverty work cannot be separated into nice, neat, hermetically sealed traditions. The responses that we've encountered in Life on the Breadline, the caring, the campaigning, the advocacy, the social enterprise, the self-help, the educational responses to poverty are broad, they are fluid, they are shaped by a range of theological perspectives that sometimes converge and sometimes diverge. One thing that unites many of those approaches to poverty is something called the Marx admission. In the late 1980s, the Anglican Communion and then in more recent years, other Christian denominations too, developed a series of what are called Marx admission, indicators, if you like, of core values that UK-based churches committed themselves to. One of which, as you'll see on the screen, was the commitment to challenge structural injustice. The approaches that we've encountered during Life on the Breadline are kind of summed up, if you like, by three key phrases. One I've already mentioned, God's preferential option for the poor. We often, however, also hear about holding policymakers to account and challenging policymakers to demonstrate the ways in which policies enhance the common good and enable human flourishing. And so if we can move on to the next slide, we can hear a little bit now from Stephanie about the impact of some of these Christian responses to poverty over the last decade.
Thank you, Chris. So the impact of Christian responses to poverty in the UK are wide-reaching and are particularly significant in terms of alleviating the symptoms of poverty, particularly through the campaigning response, through the food banks, through the breakfast clubs, and that kind of thing, which maybe has become the stereotype of what churches are doing in the UK to respond to poverty. However, as Chris has just touched on, there's also a growing critique of what many Christians consider an unjust government policy, and that's come out in our research, particularly in relation to the unequal impact of austerity and welfare cuts and to broader unjust structures. It can be difficult to quantify the impact of Christian responses to poverty, partly because measuring in some kind of form is not always the focus of those responses. And so the impact can be most clearly seen in our six case studies. So they were two case studies in Birmingham, two in London, and two in Manchester. In Birmingham, we had B30 Food Bank and Hodge Hill Church on the Furze and Bromford estate. We had Notting Hill Methodist Church and Power the Fight in London. And in Manchester, we had Church Action on Poverty and Inspire Centre in Levantine. We're going to turn to four of those six case studies. Unfortunately, we don't have time for all of them today, to look at some of the ranges of impact of Christian responses to poverty. Starting first with the food bank in Birmingham, B30 Food Bank. This is one of the largest food banks in the Midlands, and in 2020, they gave 7,920 three-day food parcels. So it's a large food bank. The bottom left-hand picture on the slide is of the warehouse. So this is a big-scale operation that we're talking about in terms of food being donated, food being stored, and food being given to local people who need the food. So the most obvious impact of the food bank is that it is giving people food so that they're no longer hungry. And a B30 Food Bank client who I spoke to in 2019, so this case study was carried out before the COVID-19 pandemic, talked about how he needed to rely on the food bank for food until he got paid. And he said, it's just one struggle after another. But increasingly, there was also a recognition of a questioning about whether the food bank should be doing what it's doing. Should the food bank be responding? Is it meaning that the causes of poverty aren't being addressed? So Lara, one of the volunteers, said to us, all of this could be avoided. There's no reason for food banks to exist. So food banks are also increasingly being involved in campaigning, for example, to end the 5-week wait from when a person applies for universal credit to when they receive their first payment. Hodge Hill Church in Birmingham on the Furze and Bromford estate provides a very different Christian response to a food bank. They use an approach called asset-based community development, which is an approach to social action that focuses on presence rather than absence. It focuses on assets that people and communities have rather than starting from the point of deficits. So it's not to ignore inequalities that exist, but it's actually to say, what do people have? What can people do? And what can they do together? So the church works on the estate with local residents and several other charities. And one of their schemes that or gatherings that they run is called Street Connecting. And Street Connectors, aside from restrictions of the pandemic, ordinarily go door to door to meet their neighbours. And Penny described the connections that can come from that when she said that 6 months down the line, you find that from the result of a conversation people have had, people are now doing amazing things on the estate. It's just wonderful to see things growing out of a conversation on connection that grew. And the impact as well has been seen very clearly of the importance of neighbour to neighbour care during the pandemic. So the bottom left, we've got Joe in the picture, who was delivering food during the pandemic to more vulnerable residents on the estate. And she said, I thought it's so much more than just going and taking food, because this helps my mind as well, and I get to connect with people. Thinking now about Notting Hill Methodist Church in London. Notting Hill Methodist Church sits in the shadow of what was the Grenfell Tower, which, as we all know, tragically experienced a fire with a huge loss of life. Notting Hill Methodist Church combines care with advocacy, and so the impact of the response here is also to emphasise that these different categories that, or different types of response that Chris has spoken about, are not categories in the sense of being isolated, but actually groups are often involved in multiple different responses at once. So in Notting Hill Methodist Church, immediately after the Grenfell Tower fire, there was short-term pastoral care, and that was really important in providing help for people who were made homeless and who had experienced such trauma. But they've also been involved in long-term advocacy and campaigning for housing justice, and that continues today. Another case study to talk about is our case study in Greater Manchester, based in Greater Manchester, that is Church Action on Poverty. Church Action on Poverty is a national charity who work to respond to poverty in the UK through social action, but also through campaigning. So they've been involved in poverty truth commissions, in the End Hunger campaign, but also in developing a different type of response to a food bank in the form of local food pantries, where people pay a small amount each month or each week to receive a subsidised amount of food, but they are receiving choice. It's a scheme they buy into, so there's choice in what they receive, and it's a community movement rather than framing it as charity. I'm now going to hand back to Chris to talk with you some of the policy recommendations that have come out of this research.
Thanks very much indeed, Stephanie. Just moving quickly, because time is marching on. The Life on the Breadline project is an example of research that is committed to having a significant social as well as academic impact. So there are three forms of impact that we're interested in Life on the Breadline. Firstly, we want to have an impact on the practice and the policy and the responses of churches in the UK to poverty and inequality. Secondly, we want to have a significant academic impact through our research. And thirdly, we are committed to working with and alongside policymakers to support policymakers as they engage with poverty and inequality, and in particular, the responses that Christian communities in the UK continue to make towards poverty as we struggle to tackle poverty together. We have just, in the last week or so, published our very detailed policymakers report arising from Life on the Breadline. That is now free to download. You can find that on our website, Life on the Breadline, under resources, and the policymakers report is there for you to read and to look through in far greater detail. What I want to do now is to skip to the end of that report and to the policy recommendations that arise from our research. I'm just going to skip through these quickly. We can return to them if we have the time. The first recommendation is that church leaders and policymakers need to work together in order to address the causes of poverty at all levels of leadership, as well as supporting people experiencing poverty. And so in response to that, we would like to invite the APPGs on poverty and on faith and society to co-host and fund a network facilitated by Life on the Breadline researchers for representatives from national churches to meet with policymakers on an annual basis to report on key issues and challenges that they face as they work to tackle poverty in the UK. Next slide, please. Related to that same recommendation, two further actions. The suggestion that smaller Christian denominations need to be listened to as well as larger national churches, and therefore should be actively encouraged to participate in this network. Important as the established church, the Church of England, is in Christian responses to poverty in the UK, it's important, we suggest in this recommendation, that we do not assume that the Christian community is reducible to the Church of England, where in actual fact it's much broader than that, but often smaller Christian denominations that are not, like the Church of England, established churches, find or feel that their voices are not heard. Regional and local policymakers, we suggest, should meet regularly with regional and local church leaders to talk and collaborate to foster more effective partnership action for poverty. And we move on to the next slide, please, Stephanie. Thank you. We suggest that you make use of the policymakers could benefit by making use of the Life on the Breadline resources to do our CPD, to read the Life on the Breadline policymakers report and the briefings for policymakers that we will be producing in the coming weeks. We would like to suggest that policymakers need to familiarise themselves with our anti-poverty charter and to meet with local and regional church leaders to discuss how this is implemented in local neighbourhoods. And then policy recommendations number three. In order to understand the reality and daily struggles faced, policymakers need to spend more time with people experiencing poverty. It's not essential. This is essential, not as support for Christian action on UK poverty, but also in responding to poverty more broadly. And so we want to suggest that members of parliament and potentially at a regional level, council leaders in Birmingham, London, Manchester, other large urban areas should arrange to spend time at local social action projects in their constituencies or local government wards that address different aspects of poverty in order to have meaningful conversations with people using these projects and gain a deeper understanding of people's experiences of life on a low income. And then moving on in relation to the same recommendation, we want to suggest that having gained an understanding of the reality of life on a low income, MPs need to use this to inform this, the expertise from experience is what our friends in Church Action on Poverty call it. Use this expertise through experience to inform policy making and to provide regular opportunities for people to directly shape policy. For example, by establishing poverty truth commissions in local constituencies across the UK. And then in relation to our fourth recommendation, that suggests that Christians and churches should not simply fill the gap, but encourage policymakers to develop structural reforms to tackle post-COVID poverty. So we want to suggest that the government should fully introduce the real living wage across the UK to replace in law the national minimum wage with a real living wage. And we want to suggest that the government should fund a research-led national pilot to explore the possibilities of introducing a universal basic income. And if we could move to the next slide, please. And evidence-informed changes we should suggest should be made to universal credit, particularly in relation to the 5-week wait. Funding streams for youth services should be reinstated to counteract the negative combined effects on young people of cuts and limitations imposed on young people's lives and their life chances as a result of austerity and the pandemic. And then recommendation number 5, in relation to asset-based community development, policymakers and funding agencies need to reframe the criteria of funding streams to emphasise the importance of funding work that builds on local communities' gifts and strengths rather than focusing exclusively on deficits. Thank you, Stephanie. And then finally, you can see the 6th recommendation in relation to poverty and poor housing. Policymakers, we suggest, need to agree a new cross-party long-term funding formula for building far more high-quality and affordable social housing. People in social housing need to be included in decision-making about housing in their area. And local, regional and national policymakers need to include social housing tenants in meaningful and regular public discussions about their housing needs. Thank you. And that's been a whistle-stop tour through our research over the last 3 years, ending with some of those policy recommendations. My apologies that we're 3 minutes over the 40 minutes, but hopefully that's given you something of an insight into the work that we've been developing and the ways in which we hope that it can support the work of policymakers locally, regionally and nationally. Thank you very much.